Jerry's gonna fuck this up, I tell you.
We can only hope.
Expect, I was gonna say, we expect another less. As Big Less. Yeah.
Hi, Big Jer.
Oh, you should get. Can we get a clip from like The Raven or some hot performing movie? Dr. Ta.
This is Professor Feather.
This is Minute Gavi.
This is Dr. Head. And together, the fellow Wayments bring you.
Radio. The whole thing on Sane Radio. Get it? .com.
Alright, ladies and gentlemen, we are here to pay homage to one of the great movie director, producer, in terms of volume, of possibly all time. Now, we're talking about Roger Corman.
Corman!
Born in Detroit, Michigan in 1926. So he passed away last month on May 9th, he was 98 years old. And right up until the end, still producing movies. Right.
Seriously. He was awesome.
He was great. So Roger Corman started out as a director when he was younger. He went to Stanford University. Got a bachelor.
As a business.
Bachelor of Science in Industrial Engineering. So he was an industrial engineer. And then started in about, I was in 1954, he started in the film business and started to direct at first and then started to produce and then created his own sort of production machine, right? All the way up through the 50s, the 60s, up to the very present. Roger Corman was that name that was a lot like Frank Zappa, which was you wanted to be ex-Corman or ex-Frank Zappa, right? That was kind of a thing. So
go to the school.
So he had people like Dennis Hopper, Jack Nicholson, Peter Fonda, Bruce Dern, Diane Ladd, William Shatner.
And how many other directors have gone?
Yeah, and then the directors, the other ones, we have James Cameron, we have Martin Scorsese, and a ton of others. You know, there's just
Francis
Ford Coppola. What did he do for Corman? What was that?
Dementia 13.
That's his movie. Dimension 13 was Coppola's movie.
But it was produced by Corman, wasn't it? No?
Yes.
Okay, yeah.
Because they made it after some other movie they filmed over there, and they just had the location for...
Yeah.
Typical Corman, just...
So he was also famous for handling distribution for a lot of the art films that we would not have seen here in America, like Federico Fellini, Ingmar Bergman, François Truffaut, and Akira Kurosawa. So he was responsible for bringing those out of their native country and into the United States and England. The directors are Francis Ford Coppola, Ron Howard, Martin Scorsese, Jonathan Demme, Peter Bogdanovich, Joe Dante, John Sayles, and James Cameron. Those are all fucking heavy hitters too. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
Every single one of them. You know, and all very different. They all became very different filmmakers.
Yeah. I think Ron Howard, but yeah, all the other actors that he brought in, then he let direct or whatever they did. You know what I mean? Yeah, so many.
It was sharing the love of filmmaking, movie making. Yeah. You know, and a passion that goes in and realizing
and making a buck. Yeah,
well, right. And why not share his ability and talent? Here's how to do it. Here's how to break it in, kid. He's not hoarding it to himself. He's freely like giving everyone an opportunity, and like because what's important is that we make movies. That's the best thing of all.
Yeah, liked how he himself, you know, how he approached it analytically to make it production wise, you know, cheaply. But then also, you know, then you start getting to where he started seeing it artistically, like, you know, like especially when he hits the Poe stuff, you know, and gets a chance to work in color and working with all that stuff, you know, looking, making it look, you know, like the budget's 10 times what it was. And it was just, it was interesting.
It was
kind of cool, you know, going from the cheesy monsters to...
He wasn't afraid to do all the genres, you know, all the exploitation genres, you know, the biker babe movies, the you know, the
hit or miss too. That's fun.
Yeah, and then just like classics, Galaxy of Terror, you know, that are you know, they're not great movies, but they're not bad. Like, you know, I think that was that was always a mark of a Corman. There was something about every one of them that had something that was interesting. Yeah, or
even Battle Beyond the Stars, as garbage as that is, that's still
Attack of the Crab Monster.
That's still a train wreck. I love watching.
I love it.
It's a bad movie, but I like it.
Yeah. Now, what's the one with John Saxon in? Is that the one?
Yeah, he's in that one.
Battle
Beyond the Stars.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we did an episode on that. It was episode 192 and a half. So go
John Saxon.
Nice.
0.5.
Yeah, 0.5. Well, he loved movies so much. And I would recommend, I think it's on Tubi, there's a television show that is like a documentary biography of his whole career. And they break it down by the different genres that he worked in, you know, whether it's horror, exploitation, you know, all those kinds of things. And just the interviews with him, he is so just happy and so positive and just, you know.
And cordial.
Absolutely cordial.
He's such a gentleman about everything.
Well, and then they would get him to act in movies as well, just have these bit parts. So it was the Godfather Part 2. He's in Silence of the Lambs.
He was the director.
Yeah, he's the director.
FBI director.
Yep.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, he's in Philadelphia. He's in Apollo 13. The Manchurian Candidate, the 2004, the remake of that.
Oh, I was going to say.
Yeah.
Okay.
Very cool. I didn't know that.
Yeah, there's a documentary that's called Corman's World, Exploits of a Hollywood Rebel. And so...
And who's his wife? His wife has been... beside him doing a lot of this stuff.
Julie Halloran. Yeah. Yeah. Julie Halloran was actually his business partner. So
And wasn't she like a script girl in the way back or some point?
I think so. But they talk about that in the documentary. So I said, I would highly recommend if you want to get like a complete look at his whole career, watch that documentary or that TV series. The documentary is really good, but the TV series that they did is also. Amazing. So let's hit up, what are some of your favorite Corman movies? Let's Dr. Head.
Going to the very first one I ever saw as a kid, The Little Shop of Horrors. I was, I think, 4 or 5. It was played on the Ghoul. Mm-hmm. And I was old enough to know, like, okay, he's holding up someone's sawed off leg and pouring these like bloody, like pulpy guts and blood.
And it comes out like in a chunk in one of the
scenes. It's just like, you know, and I'm like, and I was young enough to know what it was, like, or old enough to know what it was, but young enough to go, man, it was so crazy and scary. The plant that could talk, it was funny. I got the humor. I love The Little Shop of Horrors. I also love Bucket of Blood. You know, I think that's also a really
that's a good
clever, you know, well done movie. But
I think some of those, like, artistically the best, and X, I remember The Man with the X-ray Eyes, that scared me when I was a kid. That just freaked me out. But I love the Edgar Allan Poe movies he does, The Pit and the Pendulum and The Premature Burial, you know, Tales of Terror, The Raven, all those are just gorgeous. I love watching those. But, you know, if it's a Corman, I'm going to watch it. I mean, I just am. It's because I love the knowing that every movie he made money because he knew how to get it done under budget or under time. And the efficiency of his filmmaking inspired me when I was wanting to be a movie, you know, to shoot movies. I won't dare call them films, but I was inspired by him, as well as Ed Wood, just like taking it like two takes. That's all we need. Let's go, you know, and try to be the efficient. So yeah, I just, he's like a role model and a hero. And, I've tried to see most of his, movies. There's some that are just truly bad, but I will still just enjoy the badness.
Yeah,
but what's fun about, I think, all of his movies, I mean, like you were saying, it's literally everything, all genres, just going everywhere. And, you know, some really odd stuff out there, like what?
The Trip.
Gas, The Trip. Just some odd.
When that was always his thing with whatever genre he was in, he'd be like, okay, we got to go back and do some reshoots because we need more tits, or there's not enough gore in this.
Or violence, or something. Or monster, yeah.
What about you, Professor Feather? What's your top Corman picks?
Little Shop of Horrors is probably my top. The Mask of the Red Death I particularly liked a lot.
That's really good. Yes.
Yeah,
that's probably his most beautiful movie.
I thought the script was good. I just really liked that movie a lot. I thought that was really good. I like Bucket of Blood. Haunted Palace. That's a pretty good one. I like that one pretty well. Most of the Poe stuff I really liked, and some of his earlier stuff. The End of the World movie?
Day the World Ended with the big grasshopper.
What is that?
No,
Day the World Ended.
Grasshoppers. Yeah.
No, not the grass. The mutant. No,
the mutant
had the.
That one.
Whoever that actor is, the Bogart guy, you know.
Oh, Richard Denning.
Yeah. No. Well, yeah. I'm thinking of a whole different movie.
Bogart guy. Oh. He played the detective. He was Mannix, or not Mannix, but. Oh, damn it.
Ironside.
They called him something else.
Oh, I see.
Oh,
the guy with the dark hair, the bad guy.
Is
that who you're talking about?
Yeah.
Shit.
Yeah.
Connors. Robert Conrad. Touch Connors. Conrad. Connors.
Touch Connors. Well, that's how he went by that. I think it's Chuck Connors, but I think he went by.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah.
So, Tar, what's your favorite Corman movies?
I don't know about favorite. There's a lot of them I like. I like a lot of the early stuff, of course, the crazy stuff, and then the Poe stuff. The Raven. I really like the Raven. The Raven kind of pulled everything. Mm-hmm. And
I loved it as a kid. I'm thinking of is that the Raven with Vincent Price. Yep. Yes. I love
Peter
that.
Lorre and Karloff.
Oh, it's such a fun movie.
Because that was, when I first saw it, that was at the perfect time because you're aware of all the other stuff that they did.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden they're in this, and it's actually kind of a funny fantasy.
Guess what?
Family friendly movie. What?
Guess what?
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 I saw that in the theater.
And Professor Feather returns.
Did you like it in the theater?
Oh God, yes.
Did you?
Yeah, brilliant. Yeah, and by that time, I mean, I was a movie critic by that time, so I really liked it. I was like 13 years old.
Yeah.
Could you take the fez off?
Excuse me.
Yeah, my favorite is
Corman. That's the thing, you know, I'll say, Corman, I'm the oldest person in this group, and I've been familiar with Corman almost my whole life, you know, which he's been a part of my life and what I've been drawn to, you know.
Literally, everything,
And like you said, and, you know, stuff in across genres that you would, you know, the normal Corman fan, you know, the fan of Bucket of Blood and, you know, all of his, you know, right, that the pose and stuff, they have no idea that he did all this other stuff, you know.
What's the one, Johnny his, got his gun,
yeah, that, he, yeah, his yeah,
his producer was,
he, as a producer, it just, it was a factory,
yeah, producing,
you know, he had it run as a business, you know. And yes, he just had a really good business acumen. You got to give him credit for that. But that also comes back to the fact that, like, was it Gadfly, you said early on, he was instrumental in bringing all of these foreign directors, you know, movies into the country. Kurosawa, for Christ's sake. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, that right there, if he did nothing else in his whole life, that he brought Kurosawa to the American public,
we could be eternally grateful.
That's it right there, you know. What a testament. And yeah, you know, and just one of the testaments that, you know, this guy, you know, one of the accolades that you know he's deserved his whole life. But yeah, it made some of the worst movies that you've ever seen, but you know,
but he had an eye for trends though too, and it mm-hmm. was just kind of
was always looking at the trends.
I mean, yes. Yeah, well, these are being played at drive-ins on the second bill, most of these
a movies. Lot of them, yes.
So it's like, look, no one's fucking paying attention to this. They're making out, or they're sleeping, or they're drunk, or passed out, you know.
Yeah.
And so it's like, yeah, it's like we're gonna make. And that's why you could make a movie in 2 or 3 days.
Yeah.
But when I found that out about the Little Shop of Horrors, I thought that was oh my god, he made this, like, oh, I thought, oh, it was such young in his career, you know, he was trying to, didn't have any time, like, no, this was him, this is who he wanted to be, and he just became better at it, of making decent movies in 2 days. That's just fucking amazing.
I
think he was really good at slipping in ideas that were, you know, some of the ideas in these movies, some of them were pretty ludicrous, but just...
Well, and let's get it straight.
Entertaining.
That's 2 days of production.
Yes, right.
You're not including all the pre-production there was the beauty of Roger Corman. He knew the value of pre-production.
Yes.
Purely and simply.
Planning.
And if you adhered to that, you're almost assured that you're going to make something within your time, your budget, and, you know, that can be
halfway efficiently. Yes.
Because I equate to them? It's the fucking Coen brothers, you know, in their approach to how they make movies. They have the fucking, they have a Corman approach to make movies.
Really, the movie's probably already made. They just need to physically.
If you see. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, but we also have the Corman side that's not above taking an opportunity where there's $1 million involved, like the Fantastic Four, the original Fantastic Four, where they knew it was not going to ever be distributed. It was not, you know, it was never going to see the light of day, and that they were just going to have to go.
That wasn't so much his idea, though.
But he participated. He knew what was going on.
Oh, yes, he did.
Yeah, he's right, just, he did. When they interview him in that that documentary, Doomed, he's got that grin on his face the whole time, you know, and knowing
why
that,
wouldn't
you know,
you?
But you know, it's also, you see the side of the actors, you know, who are disappointed about that. They've thought this is a real movie. You know, they're like, this is a real movie. My favorite Corman film is The Raven, hands down. I love The Raven. I could watch that anytime. But I also like Death Race 2000 because when I was a little kid and that came on, I was like, this is bonkers. You know, I don't know what the fuck's going on here, but it's so inappropriate. You're like, they're getting extra points for killing cripples and old people.
You know, and they set them out there, too.
Yeah, they set them out. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. But I also.
They lined them all up.
I also, though, I like the fact that has a twist at the end where Frankenstein is a clone. You know, that's how he keeps surviving, is that they have all these clones of him. You know, and he doesn't really have any kind of, you know, he's like Dr. Doom.
And Frankenstein.
Yeah, when they find, it's like Dr. Doom in the comics, when they finally take Dr. Doom's mask off, there's no scarring at all. He's a handsome dude, you know, it's his psychology that thinks he's all fucked up and stuff.
Twisted,
yeah. Yeah, but those two, to me, are the standout for Corman. But I like Corman because, like you said, drive-in. When the drive-in became a thing, he's like, I'm all about that. I'm going to make some fucking money out of
everything. He was there at the very beginning.
Yeah, but then...
That's exactly what his movies were made.
In the heyday of...
Yeah, but then it shifted to video, and he was right there on the forefront of just direct-to-video. You know, him, you know...
He was on top of all that
stuff. Lloyd Kaufman.
That's... Yeah.
Yeah.
He's a pretty amazing guy. Well,
that's just sustainable.
And he was nice. You know? And he was nice about this. He wasn't a dick about anything. He was just
Exactly. Yeah.
And I love there's a huge glut of things he produced in the 90s and early 2000s that you would see like on Sci-Fi Channel, like Sharktopus and things. Yeah. And Sharktopus, and he has little cameos in some of these movies, which is great. Just fantastic, you know. And I love Shark.
Wasn't his daughter doing a lot of this stuff or something like that too?
Could have been.
It was like a family thing. Gene was.
It would make sense. Like
it was a family thing. There is a big falling out.
Very much.
Yeah, there was a big falling out with his family. In 2009? Corman was sued by his children, claiming they had been unfairly fired from the family production business after raising questions about the family trust. And then in 2016, Corman alleged he was owed $170 million in litigation against a financial planner. And then in 2018, Corman and his wife were sued by their sons over the sale of Corman's film library. And it was settled in February 2020. So it's like, it's all in
that's
the family.
That's an empire being torn apart right there. That's
That's sad.
Yeah, it is sad.
That'd be a good movie right there. Yeah.
Let's read through the list of favorite films of Roger Corman, right? So this is what he considered, and nothing is newer than 1974 of his favorite films, right? So Chinatown, he loves Chinatown. That's the newest movie that he thinks is, you know, great movie. Citizen Kane, obviously, it's got to be on the list. Doctor Strangelove, obviously, got to be on the list, right? Doctor Strangelove. Yeah. The Godfather. Again, La Dolce Vita.
No,
I've never seen it. What is who's
La Dolce Vita?
La Dolce, La Dolce, D O L C E, La Dolce.
Okay. Yeah, La Dolce, La Dolce Vita.
Who is that director? Oh, Federico Fellini. Yeah, so I've not seen that one. And he's also got Lawrence of Arabia.
Oh, Bellini,
Lawrence of Arabia.
Yeah, that's a great movie. It really is. Rashomon. To me, the best. Yeah. That's my favorite Kurosawa. The Seventh Seal. The Tin Drum. I've not seen that. Oh, wait a minute. That's the newest one. Fuck. 79. And then War and Peace from 67. Mm. So that's his list of favorite movies.
What he likes.
Yep.
Speaking of Kurosawa, the Seventh Samurai are coming back out to the movie theater for a limited run.
Oh, really?
Oh, very cool.
Yeah.
That'd be fun to see.
That would be awesome to see on a big screen.
That's a long movie.
Yeah. Bring a bucket of popcorn to pee in.
The only thing I saw in the theater...
The Coachman's Helper.
...of Kurosawa was Ron.
Ron.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, that was the only one because that was like one of his last ones, you know.
That was in the 80s, mid-80s, I think. Yeah, 85 or something.
And I didn't even know who he was. I just went to see it because we would go to movies all the time. Mm-hmm. You know, we'd just be like, oh.
Did you ever see Dreams?
Yeah, and the battle scenes were spectacular. All the colors and the banners. I mean, it was beautiful to look at.
I love the fact that they said, what made you choose that shot for that one battle? And he goes, well, because if I'd have moved too far this way, there's the Sony plant, and if I move this way, there's the airport.
Yes. That's fantastic. Sometimes you just got to shoot where you can. That's great.
Here's interesting. Remember the voyage to the planet of prehistoric women where they cut together the...
Don't
the
I? Stuff?
I know that. Well, that was Peter Bogdanovich did that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. Oh, yeah.
And I love the production design of those Russian footage, those spaceships. Mm-hmm. Everything's so fucking cool. I have I have files of that I downloaded, and I'm like, oh, this is so good.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's every bit as stylish as Baba, Planet of the Vampires. Yeah. You know, the way they looked at that film. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then Battle Beyond the Stars, James Cameron was involved in mm-hmm. that one. And every time I see it, when they're walking down the hallway and you see the texture of the hall, those are all McDonald's Big Mac boxes that James Cameron, in the middle of the night, went and he goes, I want to buy as many of these boxes as I can. Because he was in charge of doing effects and set decoration. And so James Cameron comes in the next morning and he's painted them all and put them all up there. And he's like, oh, this looks great. And he's like, how did you do that? He goes, oh, McDonald's sold me about 10,000 of those boxes. So, yeah, that's awesome stuff. Joe Dante did Hollywood Boulevard, 1976. The Burbs is we should do an episode on The Burbs sometime, Joe Dante. That is also right up there and one of my favorite. It's one of those movies I can just watch anytime.
Somebody mentioned Man with the X-Ray Eyes.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Creeped me out as a kid so much.
Yeah.
Ray Milland's performance is there.
Offend deep.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that scene at the tent revival, it's like, man, that was a little too close to home.
Yeah.
But just because it gets so crazy and with the jazz music, it becomes more manic as his vision starts getting more X-ray.
John Rickles in that movie too.
Yeah, he just it gets crazy, and especially when he starts seeing through everything and going mad.
To the party and he's just seeing through the clothes, the whole naughty bits, where they're doing the 60s, doing the crew. Yeah, it was fun. And he just gets that little smile on his face, being all blushy and all.
I like it. I thought that was good. Yeah.
Well, also,
and hey, guess what?
What?
I saw that in the theater.
Was it an X? Was it a
double feature?
Was it an X?
It was a double feature. But I remember the other one was a cowboy. I don't remember what it was. I remember
the cowboy with the X-ray eyes.
Yeah, cowboy with the X-ray eyes.
Curse of the Undead.
No, that's what it was. Curse of the Undead.
Well, we also have.
Have you guys seen that one?
What?
Curse of the Undead.
Curse of the Undead. Vampire cowboy.
It's like the first of it. Yeah, really, it was the first.
I saw Bill the Kid.
Crossover like that, I guess.
Huh? Yeah, really, really.
Curse of the Undead.
Pretty early on. It's 50-something.
Yeah, it's like Richard 60, I think. 50, is 60, that a,
60. 59 or 60, something like that?
No. Oh, okay. It's not Corman, but should have been.
Should have been. It could have been.
But it's it has Richard Fleming in it, and I don't know. They're like TV actor guys, and I don't know who.
Yeah.
I just remember the movie being overexposed or something, just very,
Well, so one of the other directors that came out is probably not as famous, but is Paul Bartel, that's the director of Death Race 2000.
Eating Raoul.
Yeah, he did Eating Raoul, and I'm but I didn't know he was the director of Death Race 2000.
He's in the movie too.
Yep, he is.
Yeah, he's an actor, comedian.
Yep.
And his wife, what was her name?
Mrs. Bartel.
Everything. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
Here's a Dr. Tarr diversion. I used to go to a bar in Liberty Center, Ohio. It's called Bartel's.
I went to one in
Peter Lorre, please.
I went to one in Assumption called Bartel No Lies.
The Bartel all.
Oh man!
I went to a Bartel.
One of the things I love about Corman the most is the stories of how they were shooting. The film cast was shooting a movie. They finished early because of their efficiency, and they had 2 days to kill. and they said, let's make a movie. And they would shoot, I guess, 65 for short, drive-in third feature in those 2 days. They'd write it up. Yeah. And shoot it. They had the equipment. They had the places. They had the same actors. And let's just do it. I'm like, I just love the amazing energy that it requires. And also, because you got to rally everyone around, because those days are long fucking days. But the fact that they were there and they believed in him so much, I think that's what I love about it. The crew, everyone was as dedicated to, right, to making movies.
Yeah, and I think there's a bunch of them like that, though.
When I think that, because of Roger Corman's his way of doing the filmmaking business just drew all those really good people to him. They're going, yeah, this is a guy that and somebody said previously he was so accommodating to everybody,
right,
sure, and like, yeah, we're talking, you're talking about that. And you're talking about that. That's what happened with Coppola's Dementia 13. He had the script and everything, and he went to Corman and said, look, I have this script. We want to shoot this. We've got, we just did this movie. We've got all this, the props and everything. I just shot
this movie for you. Yeah.
Yeah. And said, Corman said, yeah, go for it. And, Dementia 13 is actually a pretty decent movie.
The Terror is like that too,
and the Terror. Right after the Raven. The Terror I like a lot. The Terror is one.
It even all the more amazing just how quick and mishmashed it was. They pulled something out of it, and at all times
he was tapped into the people that were going to be somebody. You know what I mean? There was always they were always flowing through it. So we got, remember the Dunwich Horror in 1970, that Supernatural. It's got
Dean Stockwell.
Sandra Dee, Ed Begley. And then it's co-written by Curtis Hanson, who did L.A. Confidential.
L.A. Confidential, and a few other.
Directing. Yeah, a few other, but the
and
directing.
That's not a bad Lovecraft movie.
No.
That's not too bad.
It's not too bad. You're right. It's not too bad.
It's
not
pretty great. Psychedelic for a 70s psychedelic.
Yeah.
Which was kind of interesting in itself, but that was.
Yeah. But then he gave Ron Howard Grand Theft Auto to direct. And co-write. So
eat my dust. Yeah.
Right.
Ron Howard pops the clutch and says, eat my dust.
Yeah, Jack Nicholson. I remember the Little Shop of Horrors and Jack Nicholson being in the dentist chair and being like all excited. I'm like, what the fuck is this? As a little kid, I'm like, who gets excited about being at the dentist? God damn.
Yeah.
What's the big biker film? Him and Dennis Hopper and
Easy Rider.
Easy Rider.
Easy Rider.
Yeah.
Was that Corman?
I don't think so.
I don't think he had anything to do with it. I don't think so.
He did. I know he milked the genre.
He did a bunch of biker movies.
Right, and it had all those guys in it, too.
And I think he did Uneasy Rider.
We met the cinematographer for Easy Rider, Vilmos Zsigmond or whatever.
Zsigmond, yeah.
I annoyed him because he had to go to the bathroom, and I'm like, no, I got one question. He's like, I got to go pee. And I'm like, but here's the question.
Can I follow you in? What?
No, I said, did you actually have to light the campfire scene? He goes, yes. And he ran off to the bathroom.
I pee now.
Corman, just going to, you can look at just about any of the genres at the times, he's got a hand in movies in those genres.
And letting people experiment with directing and, is The Klansman, is that his, or did he produce it? It has William Shatner in it. It's not The Klansman, but The Intruder. I'm sorry.
That's him. That's one of his very first ones. Yeah.
The Intruder Corman? Was 62.
Yeah. Yeah. That, was it 62?
Yeah. So he was.
Yeah, hey, guess what? I did not see that one in the theater.
Oh, because he had been doing movies for 17 years by the time that one came out.
Yeah.
He was an old hack by then.
Yeah.
He had done all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, we talk about
how that's kind of a, that would be an interesting one to watch and talk about too.
Yeah,
The Intruder,
because that was done. That was done in the middle of all the Edgar Allan Poe movies, which might be why he was on a high.
And
he
was, you know, social, racial discrimination on that.
But
yeah, he. Yeah.
And William Shatner.
He really is Hollywood royalty. You know what I mean? Like, there's no real, like, the film industry worldwide is not what it is without his, you know.
Oh, yeah. Presence. Yeah, absolutely. And
you can't overstate his importance. And he himself was
multinational, obviously, but yeah.
Yeah, you're right. You can't overstate it.
Yeah, I'd love to have met him just to say how much he inspired me and how much I loved his movies, you know, just to say thank you.
Yeah,
I mean, I'm indelibly scarred from watching Little Shop of Horrors at the age 4,
right,
or 5. It's to this day, it still sticks with me, and I still have those memories. And even though I see through its cheapness and its, you know, imperfectness, I love it. It doesn't matter, you know. I just see. I'm even more amazed that I think this was a 3-day shoot. I think Little Shop of Horrors was 3 days. I think.
Yeah.
I think that's what it was.
Yeah. Like that. It's just amazing.
Yeah, and I love the fact that I grew up looking at in the TV guide for the kind of movies I wanted to watch, right? And I had no idea they were Roger Corman movies. But then after a while, you'd be like, why does that name keep coming up? You know what I mean? Like, it just keeps coming up all over.
Before you start looking for it.
Getting, like, I start getting the Monster magazines and all that stuff. And there's, like, Roger Corman. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I know about this dude.
Yeah. And then you start seeing, like, Boris Karloff and Vincent Price mixed in, or Peter Lorre in with Roger Corman. It's like, yeah.
Yes,
I'm in
stuff. Yeah, well, that was to me, like, one of the things I liked about growing up in the 70s was that we had, you know, that television, and we had the guide, the TV guide, and it was foraging. I mean, we really had to plan our time out. We really had to know what was going on, and then we would, you know, there was like a structure to it that I think now you can just go, I'm going to fill up my list of things I want to watch. And I'll never watch them. I'll spend more time putting stuff on that list than I will actually watching the movies, which I'm trying to change right now. I'm just like, if I find something, I'm just going to watch it right now.
I just look at all those as potential.
Yeah. Yeah.
Potential, yeah.
Yeah.
But Corman's movies are on Saturday. It's like Saturday afternoon fodder. Superhost or Houlihan Big Chuck for Friday evenings, or just, you know, it is like, that's the stuff I love.
The cheap
garbage sci-fi, you know? It's just still, there's only a couple that I find almost intolerable, and I don't remember the names. They sound really great. But it was one of the movies that was made in the 2-day break. This was the movie, and it is painfully bad. Like, you know,
ooh, which,
like,
one?
I don't. That's what I don't. They're on an island or like a jungle, and there's like some, like almost like some revolutionaries or something like
Shockwave?
That.
Shockwaves?
Yeah, shockwaves. But there's supposed to be a monster. There's like something really insidious in the title. But like, it's just beast driving around.
Sea.
Maybe
the beast from
the
haunted sea.
There's like a lot of driving around on this island, and it's some like revolutionaries or something, and everyone's like dressed up like Castro, you know.
It's like a comedy, yeah.
Yeah, I remember that one.
Yeah,
I kind of liked it. Actually, I hated it when I first saw it, but after rewatching it, it's kind of fun.
Yeah, I mean,
it makes a little more sense, too. You know,
But I've seen, like, I'm going down the list. I'm like, yeah, it conquered the world. Yeah, I've seen that. Day of the World Ended. Mm-hmm. Beast with a Million Eyes. Okay. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Go on. And I'm working my way up, like, God, I've seen all of these. Like, Wasp Woman. Yeah. I like the Wasp Woman. there's just so many good ones.
Yeah. No, it's interesting because a lot of this kind of stuff has made me get back into physical media. And especially, like, I bought all these Blu-rays that I never actually cracked open and started watching. But I got a copy of Killer Clowns from Outer Space a couple of years ago.
Yeah, nice.
But it's got all these like extras on it, and I'm like, I forgot about extras and commentaries, and you know, the Chido brothers talking about their whole process. That movie is fucking bonkers. But I just love the idea of being able to go back to that that time, because I loved DVDs. For the fact that we could have commentaries on them. And then things like, what was it, Magnolia, I think it was, or it was Boogie Nights, where I got a copy of Boogie Nights that had 8 commentaries on it. So it, each one of them was just Paul Thomas Anderson, and then the other were commentaries with different actors, the different actors that were in the movie. And it was great because, what is it, Mark Wahlberg is like, come on, Paulie, I got to go. I'm off to Tahiti with my boys. Come on. What's the question? You know, but I think that kind of stuff is great. And I want to actually like look at what Corman's got out there, because I would love to find stuff that has that kind of behind
him doing a commentary. That would be awesome.
Or whatever, you know, anything like that.
I think I'd love to hear him talk about how the movie was made.
I would like to hear the other people talk about him. Well, you know, their experiences.
Have any of you seen that TV show that they did? I think there's like 9 episodes or something, and each episode is a different genre that he worked in. Anybody?
A while ago. Sorry.
Yeah.
No.
Well, if you haven't,
I've never seen
it. It's marvelous. It's great. I'll find the link to it and I'll send it out to you guys because I think it's on Tubi. Is where I watched it.
Tubi is fantastic, man. Tubi is fantastic. Fucking amazing.
Yeah. There's all kinds of stuff.
They just got Speed Racer on Tubi.
What?
Yeah.
Which one?
The original series.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh man, that movie was.
But it's sped up though a little bit too much. You know they sped up the versions. Oh, I didn't see the movie. No. It's
terrible.
But the versions that were released like on DVD and stuff have been sped up a little bit to fit more onto them. Oh. So there's a guy on Facebook. He's head of the Speed Racer group. He's actually taken the Speed Racer episodes and slowed them back down.
Readjusted.
And then put on the Translux, the American release version. He put on that Translux logo in the front see. I'm like, I had forgotten all about that. Yeah. I'm like, oh. And so he puts these on YouTube so you can watch the entire series in its original glory. Anyway.
You should. Yeah. Oh, very cool.
That's cool. That's interesting. That's interesting.
Well, the other one I would like to see is Battle of the Planets. I think that would be a good one to see. Not just the cartoon TV show that we got, because that was a bunch of hodgepodge edited together.
But Gatchaman, the anime.
Actual movie that's really gory and crazy.
Oh, the live action. Okay.
No, it's not live action. No, there was an actual movie, and we saw it up in Ypsilanti. They were playing it at a comic book show we had, and we had because I had no idea that it had originally been a movie, that they used a lot of the scenes and the stills to create the TV show.
Oh, okay.
So they weren't
just cut out the gore stuff. Show.
Interesting. Yeah. Huh. Well, there was a live action movie too about Gatchaman.
Oh, really?
So it looks really cool.
Real stylized.
Yeah, it's very very.
I've got very it. Stylish. I think we saw it.
I might have found it somewhere. Yes.
Anyway, Roger Corman. As Kevin Smith would say, big bucket of win. Right, 98 fucking years.
Yeah,
yeah. Couldn't hold out for 2 more years to get 100.
Grace and decorum.
Which rhymes
as far as I know. Corman. Apparently, with them ripping each other apart, I don't know. So
it's sad about the family thing, but just so grateful for the movies that not only he made or produced, but for the people who he's helped train and turn them, helped allow them to kind of turn into what they were going to be. I'll give them the opportunities to blossom. Unselfishly, completely unselfishly. And
as bringing international movies.
Yes.
Yeah.
Bringing international movies.
Yeah.
Recognition,
to me is one of the best things.
Yeah.
If you know anything about the history of the filmmaking industry, that's a pretty big deal. We could go into that, you know, how the suppression of foreign films in America throughout the years. And so that's, you know, that's just that should be on his fucking tombstone.
Well, he is a
everything else is cottage cheese compared to that.
Yeah. He's a linchpin of film history. Film history owes a lot to him.
Yes.
You know, and it's funny again, it's funny that it does, and he makes such cheesy, shitty, movies.
Yeah.
But, I think it's just about the love of making movies. I think this is why we do a lot of stuff with Nick Cage, is because the dude just loves making movies. You know what I mean? Like, that is, his life is just, he loves making movies.
And he gets paid for doing it.
Yeah, he's a working actor. Yeah.
He does, and everybody says it's because he went into debt and lost. It's not. It's because he actually just loves the process of making movies. He gets really excited.
Yeah.
You know, and he
chooses, when he's good, he's really good. Oh, well. And but when he does his Nick Cage breakout, he's awesome.
Well, we're about to do a Nick Cage feature coming up here in the next few episodes, and that is Drive Angry.
Oh, yes. No.
If you haven't seen that yet, you should see that and come back ready to.
Yeah, look forward to that episode. Yeah.
I've decided that Amber Heard is a pretty good actor, and she can shit in my bed any day.
Only on the puppy pads.
Only on the puppy pads.
If she didn't shit, you must have quit.
Oh.
I thought you said you were going to change the sheet.
Yeah, you guys want to watch me take a dump?
Amber Heard, no!
Johnny, that's for you!
Tell you what I think of your goddamn pirate movies.
Well, if you kind of look at it this way, it kind of looks like the bear.
And you have been experiencing Dolce
Radio International
Cloquet.
Wetly. Sprockets.
UnsaneRadio@gmail.com. Unsane Radio has the presence on the Facebooks. UnsaneRadio.com. Go there and listen to every podcast that we've ever done. Well, that we've ever put out, published. There
we go. We got a couple coming up.
We got a couple,
All kinds of podcasts there.
Working on a tribute to the Blue Fez for the commentary episode that he suggested for, what was that movie we did?
Love God.
The Love God. Yeah.
Love God. Yes.
So
yes.
I'm working on putting the commentary as a track that you can turn on and off with the actual movie itself from archive.org. So.
Cool.
We will have that pretty soon for download. And then we'll also release the audio track separately so that you can just watch it if you have a copy of The Love God. If you just happen to have a copy of The Love God, you can I
want to hear that.
Don Knotts corpse fucking.
Speaking of corpse fucking, Pinefeather.com.
The dead can't say no.
That's our new motto.
That's our stigma. And Heavy Metal Horror Podcast on Facebook. Heavy Metal Horror Podcast on YouTube. Montag Lewis One Word on Instagram. Yes, we bring you all the best that is heavy, and that is horror.
And necromagic.
We freaks. Now, I'm not going to spell it. Somebody else has to spell it.
W-E-E-F-R-E-E-K-Z.
Thank you. On Facebook, family-friendly comic, panel comic that is just absolutely beautiful. And if you've never seen it, go watch or go look at it. Go read it. There's a
traditional comic book.
If Peanuts were set in a carnival. That's kind of that.
So the front of the t-shirt would say the dead can't say no. The back of the t-shirt would say if you say no, you ain't dead.
You taint dead.
You taint dead. Taint misbehaving.
I know a few people would buy one of those.
Yeah. Just a disclaimer, we are not family friendly.
Sorry, we probably should put that
at the beginning, yeah.
Too late. if they haven't gone through 260 shows by now, I'm sorry. We haven't done our job.
This could possibly be somebody's first show.
At least I didn't say
that's true. We should say it at the beginning. We should say it.
Warning, 12 feet. No swimming in the deep end.
No pissing in the shallow. Slowest fade. I was just waiting for the fade fucker.
I might add, uninterrupted, so.
I was going to say, I was waiting for the fade fucker. I was trying to give you plenty of room.
You know, I forgot to record this. Can we
and
do
I gave you plenty of room.
Again?
we got to do it again because I forgot too as well. And that one was a tight 52.